This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and Janine Pitas is here from Iowa. She's going to speak later at the Library of Congress for a group that are speaking about translating poetry to Spanish and from English to Spanish. So we will be talking to Janine about that. But first of all, she is a poet in her own right, and she's going to read us one of her own poems. What is the name of the book, Janine?
The book is called Thank You for Dreaming, and it was published earlier in 2018 by Lummix Press.
It was an award-winning book, if I remember. So let's hear a poem.
How I Began. It's May 2006. The streets are covered in autumn leaves, and I sit in a white-walled room filled with people waiting for an answer. 22 and timid, I can't look my elders in the face, much less my youngers or those the same age. What is your vision of Latin American literature, they ask. This is not my language. These are not my lands. What am I supposed to say to these teachers at the Centro Regional de Profesores in Salto, Uruguay? I stare down at my hands, take a deep breath, and fumbling for words, I begin. I speak of Neruda's Fire on the Wind, of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's Winged Old Man. I mention Borges' magnificent library, filled with all the selves we could ever hope to be. I speak of Marosa Di Giorgio's Flaming Garden, Juan Rulfo's Burning Plain, Ernesto Cardenal's prayers that the scales of the universe might finally tip in the direction of justice. I speak of Oscar Romero's martyrdom, Mercedes Sosa's resounding thanks. My voice takes off, no longer my own, as others speak through me. And in this moment, I know, from the Arctic to Tierra del Fuego, we are one America, India y del Sol.
Oh, that is so beautiful, Janine. And tell us what you're going to be doing at the library this afternoon.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, one little correction. My group, we translate from Spanish to English. You said that we translate from English to Spanish, but no, we're all U.S.-based poets and translators with a passion for Latin American literature, and we are working on translating some poets from Uruguay from Spanish into English.
So where is Uruguay?
Uruguay is in South America on the eastern Atlantic coast. It's between Argentina and Brazil.
And has it given us great poets?
It has given us so many great poets. For a country of just 3 million people, it's astounding how many poets have been in this tradition from Uruguay.
And you are really the recipient of an award as a finalist, which I think is very important because it's a national award. And what is that book?
Okay, so I didn't get the award, but I was a finalist for the National Translation Award given by the American Literary Translators Association for I Remember Nightfall by the Uruguayan poet Marosa Di Giorgio.
How did you choose this poet?
It's actually kind of a long story to try to make it a little bit more brief. I've been working on Di Giorgio since 2006. I got a Fulbright when I finished my undergraduate degree to travel to Uruguay and do some teaching work. And I knew I wanted to do translation. I hadn't chosen a poet. It actually was a surprise that I got to go to Uruguay at all because I had applied to go to Argentina. So it was one of these amazing life surprises. And my professor, Maria Negroni, who is from Argentina, recommended this particular poet, Marosa Di Giorgio, and I've been working on her ever since.
What do you love about her?
What I love about her is the way that she combines childhood memories, mythic beliefs, her own mythology, a kind of Blakean visionary spirit, the sublime presence of nature, humor, fear, so much. It's
I am
amazing.
So glad that you're bringing her to the world, because it sounds like a treasure unfolded. This is really something we have to thank you for. But as a poet in your own right, we want to hear one of your poems right now.
Thank you so much. So this one I am going to read for you is actually not in the chapbook, Thank You for Dreaming, but it's I consider it sort of my signature piece, so I'll just read this one. When we were human, when we lived in houses like books lining the shelves of Borges' library, when each of our stories was a hagiography in the Encyclopedia of Saints, when we sat around kitchen tables sipping tea, words floating from our lips like butterflies bearing enormous scrolls, when we unraveled that parchment and still understood the strange cursive letters that moved and flowed like worms beneath the earth, when we stuck our heads out the slow train's windows, beneath us the rails were singing, when we got lost in a forest of conifers, when we made a wrong turn and ended up in the next town, when we took pictures of wasps, for they too were made of light, when we watched the rain falling gently on mushrooms, when we stepped over wet stones in the dark forest, when we searched for stars in the mist, when the hum of mosquitoes was still the holiest prayer, when the veins of our hands were still roots and flowers sprouted from them as we grew old. Now that we know all movement is rotation, now that we are motionless stars, now that we search for ammonite fossils in the marble floors of shopping malls, reaching to touch the galaxy spiral, but only feeling cracks, now that we neither kneel on pebbles at the river's edge nor stare down at it from high crags, now that we would never stop to touch the scales of a forest snake, now that we don't stand up to pray the Angelus at noon and our voices no longer embrace each other like folded hands, now that all our languages have converged into just one word, which we repeat again and again and again. We are told we have not changed. We are told that we are as we always were. If anything, we are greater now, closer to those angels we once prayed to. We are told we should be grateful as we drift from now to now. We are told that we are still human, but I don't believe it.
Janine Pitas, I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're at the Library of Congress, and that is a powerful poem. My heart really started beating so much with the repetition of when, now. That was so skillful and so rich in imagery. Do you believe that you're getting a little bit of the Spanish tone in your work? Are you influenced at all by Marosa Di Giorgio?
I'm definitely influenced by Marosa Di Giorgio and other poets that I've translated from Spanish. I mean, I think that all writers are influenced by what we read and what some theorists of translation have said, most famously Spivak, Gayatri Chakravorty Spivak, have said that translation is the most intimate act of reading. So,
I like that. There are so many things. Merwin says that translation is not possible, and yet we do it. Janine teaches at the University of Dubuque in Iowa, and she teaches English and Spanish. She's the author of 3 chapbooks. Most recently, we have heard a poem from Thank You for Dreaming, Lummox Press, and that was actually published not too long ago. And now you have a full length coming out from Mosaic Press. And was your second poem from that new edition?
It was. It was from my first chapbook, and it's going to appear again in this new full length, my first full length book from Mosaic Press, yes.
And as we said, the translation of poetry by writer Marosa Di Giorgio was featured as a finalist in the National Translation Award. And who sponsors that award?
The American Literary Translators Association.
That's 2018.
Yes.
And your new book's coming out very soon in 2019. It's a thrill to have you here. Thank you for coming. How was Iowa? Was it snowy yet?
Not yet, but it'll be soon.
Well, we want to hear you. Janine Pitos, I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're at the Library of Congress.
All right, so I'm interested in this book in some women who have been maybe neglected or forgotten by history. So this one is just called Frida, and it's about the famous Mexican painter from the 20th century, Frida Kahlo. Gorgeous freedom-seeking Frida, those weren't dreams you painted. I see you with your flowers, the black hairs of your head and body, determined to prove that your face could hold as much history as any mural, that your eyes contain the gaze of thousands, that your hair could grow long, back to a time before your people were labeled una raza cósmica. Frida, holding hands with yourself, determined to paint your way through Diego's great form. You didn't need him, but took him anyway, tattooed him on your forehead, donned his suit, asked him to hold you, to see you. But he didn't, and neither do we. As we transform you into our chic Day of the Dead cover girl, our secular Guadalupe, Mexican Marilyn Monroe, poster child for love addicts and accident victims, as we set you on the altar with Sylvia, Virginia, all the other crazy women artists, we forget that what we coo and smile at is your lifelong fight to be seen.
That is terrific. That gives another dimension to her.
Only a third of her paintings are self-portraits, but that's what she's known for. And I mean, this was actually inspired by an art exhibit that I saw, which featured both Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo. And the way they presented it was that he was this great public artist painting the history of Mexico, while she was just sort of painting her interior life, her struggles, her private consciousness. And I would say to that, no, she also was painting a history of Mexico, just using her self-portrait to do it.
I think that's a contribution. I do. Let's have another poem.
Okay, switching gears here. This one, I think, has a little bit more to do with the title of this book, Thank You for Dreaming. It's called Tracing Us. Our meeting was common. You were sitting at the bar when I drifted in from an afternoon of fleeting cherry blossoms, April pink. But before that, winter. Surely we both traipsed around the city in heavy coats, grumbling in the subway. Did I ever pass you in the street? Did I duck in front of you to enter a crowded bus? Did I toss my bag on the seat that should have been yours? Then, autumn. Making your home here, you navigated through immigration offices and costumes, adult learning centers, jack-o'-lanterns. Meanwhile, I wept in a psychologist's office beside the man I loved when he said he could no longer love me. Before that, summer. You landed in my country on the day of the parade. Amid fireworks and majorettes, you unpacked your suitcase in a tiny apartment shared with your parents, while I read Robert Graves at the beach and wondered why life felt so wrong. Before that, it gets harder to trace. There's an ocean between me and my understanding of you, until I returned to 2003, when, at 19, I saw boys my age get shipped off to invade your country. I watched bombs fall on primetime TV. Shock and awe, we called it. Somewhere in that city, you were hiding between the flimsy walls of your house, barricaded by the dreamscapes of old movies, Rita Hayworth, Sophia Loren, Marilyn Monroe, smiling muses. You sketched, painted, played the oud, creation your best resistance to the sirens. Sometimes you dreamed of walking free through safe streets, gazing at a clean blue sky. You always woke up. I want to go back to a time before war, numbers, money, oil, even before prayer. I picture us, 3 years old in our gardens, me with my maple trees, you with your palms. Both of us smile as we play tag with cousins, chase butterflies, leaf through the pages of books we can't read yet, draw pictures of a world, like us, still unbroken.
There's such a sweet innocence in that poem, but it is burdened by history and by war and by the complications of relationships. But your tone remains so pure and so hopeful that you can talk about anything and make it redemptive, I think.
Thank you. Do you
have that knowledge about yourself?
Not
poets
necessarily.
Don't usually. No.
Not necessarily. I mean,
let me ask you this. We have heard a little bit, and I wanted to hear segments of this book all together so that we could get a real sample of you. What I believe is there's a story here you keep telling over and over. Do you think that there's a theme that runs through that book? I know you're featuring women and bringing them forth, but do you feel that's the major overview of that book?
Well, you mentioned redemption, and I do believe in redemption. I believe that there are no good people or bad people, that we're all human, that we all do wrong things, we all hurt other people, we all help other people. You know, we're all a mixture of the good and the evil, and that there is redemption available for all of us. Yes, I do believe that.
And the Buddhists call it nothing tainted, nothing pure. Hmm. And I believe that's exactly what your poetry is about. It's really a fine balance. Let's hear one more. We're at the Library of Congress with Iowa Poet.
Okay, so on that theme that you're talking about, this one is called Mandatum Novum, which means the new commandment. For years, I refused to wear your sign. I knew they'd look at me and see the clash of swords, burning cities, children shaking in their beds on Saturday nights, afraid of the Sunday morning sacristy, Torquemada's tortures, Galileo's angry assertion, and yet it moves. Looking at me, they'd see a city covered in gold, turned away from millions of Lazaruses begging at its gates. They'd hear the cries of sinner to those whose love is deemed unclean. They'd hear the shouts of murderer to the rape victim just too damn tired of being a mother to pain. They'd see residential schools, smallpox blankets, Christopher Columbus using the Bible to sanction his lust for gold, Bartolomé de las Casas, supposed protector of the Indians, who, full of good intentions, decreed the Middle Passage a road to freedom. If they saw your sign around my neck, I know they would not hear Oscar Romero's desperate cries, Cesa la represión. They'd not hear Dorothy Day's assertion that the answer to the long loneliness is community. They'd not hear the call to feed the hungry, visit the imprisoned, pray for the living and the dead. They'd not see the thousands gathered outside the gates of the military base, urging those inside to study war no more. Mm. But I have seen the thief forgiven. I have watched the homeless meth addict get offered a bed. I have heard your voice in the Foray Requiem in Oxford, La Misa Campesina in Nicaragua, Candombe drumming in Uruguayan streets. And I've finally decided to wear the instrument of your execution. You, who knew you would die for a crime you did not commit. You, who on your final night turned to us and said, "Take my body, drink my blood, bind it to your own. And then go into the broken oceans, go into the burning forest replaced by fields of soy. Go into the cities where men stand alone on balconies, move among the night walkers who weave their way through construction sites. Go to the pipelines, swim through the black ink you've used to write your names on this land. Don't lock your doors, don't let your eyes glaze in hours and hours of online delirium. Don't bury yourself behind a mountain of books. Go with your hands, eyes, and ears open. Go to listen and hold.
You do so much in one poem. You cover so much which is spiritual and even mentions of certain religions, certain icons, certain sacred images, and yet you always bring it home. You always bring it home to the human self. Now, about translation, I heard one definition that translation is just another version of the same poem. Do you agree?
That's a fairly complicated question to answer. I mean, I think that it is different. I think translation is an act of creating something new. It's never exactly the same. It can't be, you know? I mean, that's sort of, it's like the Quran, right? If you want to read the Quran, you have to read it in Arabic according to Islam, if you really want to have the full impact of that word. But at the same time, as Douglas Hofstadter, the famed cognitive scientist and who's also a literary translator, has said, you know, most of us would say that we read Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky in high school. We wouldn't say we read a translation of Crime and Punishment. We'd say we read the actual novel. So I do believe that these poems that you can read in this book, I Remember Nightfall, are the poems of Marosa Di Giorgio, but they're in English, and she didn't write them in English.
And you did. Would you read us a poem, please?
Sure.
Now, yes. Tell us who she was.
So Marosa Di Giorgio was born in Uruguay in 1932. She died in 2004. She was very much appreciated in her lifetime by some, but seen as an outlier by others. And she funnily called Emily Dickinson her poetic twin. And I think kind of like Emily Dickinson, she's starting to get more recognition both in her native country and in Latin America more generally, and now in the English-speaking world, you know, now that she's deceased rather than when she was alive. I wish that she were around to see some of the recognition she's getting now.
And thank you for adding to that. So what are you going to read us?
So this is just one piece from her book called Está en Llamas el Jardín Natal, and it's just a poem that I happen to love. The native garden is in flames. It doesn't have a title, the poem itself. Dios está aquí. Dios habla. A veces en la noche, cuando menos espero, de entre las cosas, sale su cara, su frente, inmensa y diminuta como una estrella, centelleante y fija. Hace años que anda por la casa. Allá en la infancia, yo no me atreví a decirlo a nadie, ni a papá, ni a mamá. Era como un cordero, una forma pavorosa, que se comía las hierbas, bramaba un poco, topaba la casa. Una gallina blanca como la muerte, como la nieve o negra, una gallina crucificada con las alas bien abiertas y el cuello manando sangre. Él estuvo presente en la fiesta que dio mi madre, no sé por qué. Cuando vinieron todas sus amigas de collares y coronas y se sentaron en las habitaciones y se les servía miel, vino, manzanas, otras confituras, nadie se fijó en un comensal de ojos inmóviles y grises. Dios vuela un poco, a veces cruza volando la noche, como si fuera irse. God is here. God is speaking. Sometimes at night, when I least expect it, his face appears among my things, his forehead immense and tiny like a star, sparkling and steady. For years, he has been moving through the house. In my childhood, I did not dare to say anything to anyone, not to papa, not to mama. He was like a ram, mm-hmm. A dreadful shape that devoured the grass, roaring a little, knocking about the house. A hen white like death, snow or black. A hen crucified with wings spread wide open, its neck oozing blood. He was present at the party my mother gave. I don't know why. When all her friends arrived with necklaces and crowns and sat down in the rooms, all were served honey, wine, apples, other sweets. No one noticed another guest at the table, his eyes immobile and gray. God is flying a little. At times, he flies across the night as if he were going away.
Now we come to the end of our program, and we would love to punctuate that with a final poem.
This last one from Thank You for Dreaming, the chapbook, is called Mary Comes Down. It is said she was assumed into heaven. Deathless, she stood on the moon, was crowned with 12 stars. But today in Rome, I see her begging outside the stone churches that hold her statue. In Jordan, she sleeps in a refugee camp, invites neighbors for tea, shoots a film of her kids pick up soccer games. She's heard that in the West, they like this sort of thing. In the San Fernando Valley, she bends to harvest grapes. She cuts garlic and gets half the wages she was promised. In Mexico, she sells lace and tells anyone who will listen that four of her sons have disappeared from Veracruz. In Iowa, she sweeps the floor at Walmart after the other workers have left. Before this, she worked in a slaughterhouse, her task to kill the male chicks. She who once deflected the plague's sharpest arrows now tends to those dying of AIDS in a Kenyan village. Sometimes she makes the news when her raft capsizes on the Mediterranean, but it goes unnoticed when she is sold into slavery, dies in childbirth, walks for a day to fetch water, and finds the well dry. Again and again, her son offers to raise her, adorn her in royal blue, a final glorious mystery. Again and again, she shakes her head, gives the diadem back, casts off her mantle to cover a child.
Janine, your work is nothing less than spectacular. That poem is such an inspiration to me and everyone who will hear that. Your work is deep and beautiful and is a contribution to literature. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. That was the voice of Janine Pitas. I'm Grace Cavalieri. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production. Mike Turpin gives us post-production at MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation and the Sinipet Fund. We would like to thank Mike Turpin, our engineer. I'm Grace Cavalieri.